Good evening, everybody. This is David Noble and Dog ATV, and you're listening to Radio Edutalk this evening. Delighted to say that we've got a packed show tonight, and we're going to be hearing from four educators talking about a variety of, I suppose, e-learning and e-assessment topics and tools. Welcome to tonight's show, Alex Duff, who works at Education Scotland. Alex is going to be talking about student portfolios and profiles. We also have Tony Gardner-Medwin, who's going to be talking about certainty-based marking, and Tony's at University College London. And later on, we're going to be joined by Chrissy Narancy and Dr. Chris Smith, who are going to be talking about social media e-portfolios for learning and assessment. Delighted to say that this show's come about in conjunction with the e-Assessment Scotland conference, the online aspect of which has been taking place for the last fortnight, and more details can be found if you Google e-Assessment Scotland. And the e-Assessment Scotland live conference is taking place this Friday, and Radio Edutalk will be present, and we'll be broadcasting some interviews with presenters, and I'm delighted that some of the presenters are joining us tonight. And I would like to thank Kenji Lam from SOFED, or SOFT, I think it's pronounced, who's been instrumental in organising tonight's show. So we will be live from the conference in Dundee on Friday, this Friday coming, and next Wednesday we will also have some more presenters from this excellent conference who will be talking about a range of other e-assessment and e-learning topics. So welcome to the show, Alex and Tony. Just before I start by asking Alex and then Tony to introduce themselves, if you would like to get in touch with the show this evening, and this will be a longer than usual show with so many great guests and great topics and discussion to be had, so we might be going on for beyond the next 60 minutes. If you would like to get in touch at all with the show while we're broadcasting live, then you can email edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, and if you've got a comment or question for our panellists, you can also get in touch via Twitter, and the hashtag is edutalk, that's edutalk. If anybody's listening live and there's any problems at all with the feed, then just refresh the webpage, the Radio Edutalk webpage, or get in touch by email or by Twitter. So we'll just start off, Alex, if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself, maybe give us a flavour of your career to date and your current involvement in Scottish education.
Absolutely, David, thank you very much, and it's wonderful to be on the show tonight, and I'm really excited for coming about tonight, but also about Friday as well, up in Dundee at the ESSN conference. At my career, I started as a computing teacher in Dumbartonshire back in about 1986, I think it was. And I have had several jobs, including I was an ITE lecturer at the University of Glasgow not long after that. And then I was a principal teacher of computing over in St David's High School in Dalkeith. Following that, I actually had my own company for a couple of years, looking at some electronic software online. And after that, I then was an education officer with North Yorkshire Council. Then, about 2 years ago, I moved across from there to work with Learning Teaching Scotland, and of course, that is now Education Scotland, and I'm still there at the moment. My current position within Education Scotland is the Education Manager within the Emerging Technologies team. And of course, part of the emerging technologies is growing into all the exciting things happening with at the moment as well.
That's fantastic, Alex. Thanks very much. And Alex is going to kick off in a moment, just talking about his topic around student portfolios and profiles. But I'd also, just at this point, like to ask Tony Gardner-Medwin just to come in and give us an idea about his work in education to date. The reason I'd like to introduce Tony at this point is that after Alex has spoken about his topic, no doubt John, Tony and myself, as well as hopefully listeners to the live stream, we'll be looking to maybe ask some questions of Alex. So Tony, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, please.
Yeah, indeed, it's great to be here online to Scotland. I probably had my most important part of my education in Scotland that I'm afraid my family left in when I was 8 years old, so that's quite a time ago. I'm a physiologist in London at University College London. I'm officially retired these days, but for the last many years I've actually been keen on trying to improve the way that people use objective questions in online tests and exams, and with this certainty based marking that I think I'll be talking about later on. I've done that partly in the context of teaching medical students, but it's also used more widely as well these days. So that's me, basically.
Thanks very much, Tony. Look forward to hearing you during the rest of the show. So, Alex, could you maybe kick us off then with, an introduction or indeed a definition for listeners out there of what we actually mean by student portfolios and profiles, and then go on to tell us a bit about the work that you've been doing. And I think, look, maybe just to give a bit of context to listeners, some of what we'll be talking about tonight will also feature in either the online or face-to-face aspects of the Assessment Scotland conference. Okay, Alex.
Well, thank you very much. Hello, Dave. Actually, to really try and define what we mean by profiles and profiling, back in December 2010, the document, which was really part of the curriculum plan, was published called The Framework for Assessment, Recognising Achievement, Profiling and Reporting. And that outlined the requirement for all primary 7 pupils from last session and then all ST pupils down in this session, where they're required to have a profile. Now, by a profile, what do we mean by profiling results? It's that profiling is a continual process by which all pupils are supposed to then start to record their education experience, and they've also got to be able to reflect on them as well. So the profiling is really this continual process of recording and reflecting on what they have done in school. The profile itself is like a snapshot of where the pupil is at a particular moment in time, and I think behind the profile is that we are trying to capture the latest and greatest educational experiences across different curricular areas, and of course having the power to reflect upon them. And as I said earlier on as well, currently this is a requirement both at P7 and now joining it this year, also at S3. Really, the journey within GLOW, which is the tool we use in order to try and deliver this particular assistance really, to take forward that requirement for the profiles, we use the WordPress, which is a part of what we've got within GLOW itself. We did look back in 2010 when I joined Learning Teaching Scotland, as it then was called. We did look at other solutions, you know, some of the market solutions out there, such as Mahara and SQA DiskSpace and several other things. We also looked to see what we had within GLOW itself, to see perhaps if some of the other tools which we had might be a suitable way of taking this particular agenda forward. And of course, we looked at wikis as well as the blogs, and also we looked at using core GLOW groups as well, to see if that might be something which might help to take things forward. However, once that we looked at all the requirements that we had, particularly the requirements outlined within the framework for assessment document I referred to earlier on, We realised that by far the best tool that we could find for doing this was simply reading a blog, and WordPress, as fantastic as it is, was the best tool we had for that at the time. One of the kind of real powerful developments which we managed to implement into our solution was that we've now got profiles automatically coming up within the blog. When we started creating these back in early 2010 and working with lots of local authorities to try and create a solution, we ended up with a solution whereby the pupils would still have to copy and paste the evidence they've recorded into this final report, this final profile that the pupils had to produce. So therefore, what we then did was, like back in November 2011, we came up with the idea of trying to create an automated profile, and that has proved to be incredibly popular. Across Scotland's 32 local authorities, we have now managed to engage with 30 of them, and we've now got in excess of 50,000 pupils who have got their e-portfolios created and are using them in a kind of a very different, interesting ways in order to fulfill this requirement. So we've worked very, very closely, not just with the technology side of things, but also with the assessment side of things. At Education Scotland, we have, of course, got a fantastic assessment team, and the assessment team have been working very, very closely with us in order to try and make sure the solutions that we produce are in line with exactly what the Scottish Government are wanting us to to try and take this forward. I'm also working very closely with local authorities in order to make sure that the solution that we have created with them not only is a solution which is going to meet their needs, but also a solution which they can feel part ownership of, because of course they have been part of this type of process as well. And I think the fact they have been able to engage with local authorities and allow them to put a stamp on how it's looking and how it works and what it does has really been quite a bonus for us. So I think really the main work I've been working on the last short while with the profiles and the actual profiling system.
Thanks very much, Alex. And before I check the email and Twitter, I've got loads of questions myself, but I'll just ask one to kick off, and then Tony and John, feel free to come in as well. I think where to start, Alex. You're saying that, I've read the framework myself and in my own school, I've certainly been nudged to really get going with the profiling. I work in particular with secondary pupils, so you were talking about S3 there. I'm just wondering whether this fits within a kind of continuum. Is there, I don't want to get my ahead of myself here, but is there any talk about actually starting this eventually before the children get to P7, or indeed thinking about the kind of 14 to 18 year old phase of learning? Is there talk about taking that beyond as they move closer to further and higher education and into the workplace, and how this kind of profiling could benefit them?
In fact, we are of course very, very keen to try and make sure that the continuum continues through to 18. As I said, we've got approximately 55,000 pupils now using this system, and of course that is way in excess of the number of primary 7 pupils we have. So what has happened in many, many schools is that the primary 7 pupils have used the system, and it's been so popular that the primary 6 pupils have thought, my goodness, if the primary 7s can do this, why can't you do it as well? So very often it's not just the primary 6 but also the primary 5, and in many occasions it's the primary 4 pupils who are using the system as well. So very much so, David, it has really been going through the school. We're also aware of several schools and local authorities. People ask me who they are at the moment, so I can't think of who they are. But there are some as well who are using the system as class boards in primary 1 to 3, and also looking at doing it in nursery as well. We've also spoken to the SBA about a possibility, and it really is a possibility, of a system in order to be a system which would be able to assist with students undertaking the Scottish Baccalaureate. So yes, we're absolutely very keen to make sure that it doesn't end up solely as a system which is going to be used in P7 and SBA. So we really see this as something which we can hopefully embed right through the pupils' journey to school.
I maybe could just come in there. I think I work in one of the local authorities that Alec works with, and we've certainly got teachers and children as far down as primary 4 using the portfolio blogs, and certainly some younger classes using them as class, or using WordPress as a class blog. And I think that's maybe a really good way to go, is rather than plunging in at primary 7. If by the time they get to primary 7 they've had a bit of experience, and maybe in the younger years they've even had experience of using the software, it might be as a whole class lesson, it's a good start.
Yeah, very much so, John, absolutely. And it's really has proved its worth in kind of all different panel of ways. And as I said, it's really good that we've had the younger people using it. David was talking about his own school though, and talking about the SBA agenda which we've got this year. It may be of interest to the listeners that if you are going along to SLS and haven't signed up for all the seminars yet, that I will be presenting with Parkhead High School and Dunlottis High School on how this system can be used in order to help automate profiles for SBA. So that might be of interest to some of the listeners. That particular seminar is at 3 o'clock on the Wednesday, that's the 19th of September, you want a week or then you're four for the seminar.
Good for you.
Well, that's really helpful, Alex. And again, you know, Tony, feel free to come in. My next question is maybe about, you mentioned about linking in with SQ and the Scottish Baccalaureate. That's not something that I've experience of teaching pupils towards, but I'm wondering about other SQA courses. I mean, my understanding would be that it could be written into some of the new assessment arrangements or course arrangement documents, in the sense that it wouldn't take a lot. You wouldn't need to necessarily use the language of ICT. It would maybe just be a case of saying, you know, this aspect of self-reflection, say within an SQA course or within maybe a Skills for Work course, to be more specific, maybe like employability, that fourth, fifth and sixth year pupils could naturally be using a WordPress blog or similar tools to capture their learning, to build a profile up and reflect, and it might actually count to maybe any number of SQA qualifications if done in a way that's valid and reliable. So, I mean, can you say any more about that?
Well, very much so, Dave, and as I did say, it's kind of early stages of the SQA. We've met with them a couple of times just to demonstrate what it is that our system does, and we've actually been working with one or two secondary schools in order to see if we might be able to use this as a system as well. So it is in its early stages. The SQA have obviously got other requirements over and above some of the requirements that we have got, and that is something else that we've been talking with them about as well. So there are some other aspects that we really need to take into consideration in order to help take this forward properly, but that certainly is something we're very interested in doing. I think it's really fair to say that until we've really started this new culture of reflection within the pupils, that very often when it comes to some type of personal statement, the first time the pupils do it is in a completely new recast forum. So I think it's a whole range of reasons really why this reflective practice that we're trying to nurture in our pupils is a really positive step. And it would be terrible if we had the pupils doing this, as John said, that some of his pupils in the training before doing this. If they're going to take SD, it really is something we've got to keep going. So I really do think that it would be insane once the pupils have developed these skills to quite a high degree, that if we don't work on that and make sure we can take that forward in some shape or form, in order to make sure that we can benefit them and for the learning that we can keep.
Alec, I'd be interested, you said at the start that you sort of weighed up various different pieces of software. I think Mahara was one, which is, I believe, Moodle's e-portfolio sort of solution, and some other things, wikis and things like that. Can you maybe say a wee bit about why that you went down on the side of WordPress, which is maybe a lot more open-ended than some of the tailor-made solutions?
Absolutely, John, of course. As I said, we looked at lots of different solutions, not just Mahara, but we also looked at DeskSpace, and we looked at Merit and Honeycomb. So we did look at quite a number of solutions which were out there. At the time with Mahara, we felt that it was a wee bit kind of more kind of growing up than what we wanted to do with the younger pupils. So really an awful lot of what we were doing with WordPress, and an awful lot of the reason that we decided upon WordPress was really to be able to felt that we could make the feel of the WordPress blog solution better than or more appealing rather to the pupils than what we could do with Mahara at the time.
Yeah.
Alex,
I'm sorry, John, you want to
One more wee question, if it's the WordPress thing. I mean, I've seen recently WordPress been used very effectively in university level courses over in the States, and there's obviously a lot of power in WordPress for aggregating things and collecting information automatically or semi-automatically from different blogs. And I wondered if that would be on the cards at some point for the GLO or Scottish blogs.
Yeah, absolutely, John. What we're doing at the moment, as you know, is we are in a state of massive change just now within the world of GLO, and we are waiting to see exactly how we're going to be taking this forward. So we are absolutely going to be investigating the new tool set to see what opportunities they may have for improving our solution. But it is very important to make sure that, first of all, however this is developed, it's an improvement, or at the very least, things are as good as they are at the moment. And secondly, if things do move, to make sure that that is done transparently.
Great stuff.
Alex, I've just got one final question. I'm going to bundle a few things in here. I'm thinking about the focus in Curriculum for Excellence, or one of the focuses on outdoor learning, active learning and such like, and we've got young people going about with small cameras capturing experiences and capturing outcomes and reflecting using such devices. And we also obviously have young people achieving out with school and out with term time. Do you feel that the way we're set up is kind of fit for purpose in terms of allowing people to use different types of media to capture the learning, to then be able to upload it to these sites? And the final thing, I suppose, is looking long term, when we've got pupils moving into the workplace or further in higher education, can you comment on the portability of a WordPress blog that's cited within Glow?
Sure, absolutely, David. First of all, the way that we've currently got our WordPress deployments or WordPress installations, the way that we have got integrated with Shibboleth means that it's not possible just now, well, that's not true, that we haven't developed apps in order to use the mobile technology in the way to escape. It would have to be done through a browser. Some of the smartphones and so on have the browsers on them, and of course that could use the cameras, absolutely no problem at all. The apps could be developed to allow them to work with Shibboleth, but of course the lifespan we've got for the current version of Go makes that really prohibitive. It would be silly to go and spend a lot of money developing these apps when the current solution isn't going to be in place for a particular long time. So what we're doing is we're looking to see what we're going to be moving across to, and at that point we'll be looking, as I said, to see if there might be other solutions out there which could be as good as we've got to say. Of course they may not be, and then at that time we'll then be looking to see how we can integrate more mobile technology into the solution, because I agree with you completely, David. In this day and age, it's madness not to have some really powerful mobile technology, particularly, as you said, if kids are outdoor and so on, in order to have them be linked up their software and hardware in that way. Funnily enough, actually, we ran a pilot over on Arran for the 18 months there. It's only just completed at the end of term. And what we did was, 18 months ago, we gave every single primary six people on Arran an iPod, and we used that in order to see, first of all, what we could do with the education in school, but also one of the main drivers behind it was to use our solution for profiling and profiles. We start our solution outside of Go so that we could then use the apps in order to see how successful that was. So the research from that again is also feeding into the fact that we do recognise that through time we are going to have mobile technology interacting with our particular solution. So yes, that's very important for us, David. David, ask the second question. It's escaped my mind. Could you remember what the second part of that question was?
Yeah, I'm usually kind of rambling.
Not at all.
I'm not even sure if I can remember. It was about the portability.
Of course, absolutely.
For a young person leaving school.
Absolutely. WordPress does not conform to Leap2A, which is, of course, the standard format, which is for most of the commercial e-portfolio solutions which are out there. However, WordPress being WordPress and responsible for something ridiculous, like I think it's about 18 or 19% of all new websites created worldwide are created in WordPress. So, it's such an out there product. It's what really is an amazing product. And of course, WordPress can export to many, many different formats. So certainly, as far as, people being able to take this stuff for themselves, absolutely, of course they can. They can export an XML file, which then would allow them to then take the content and upload it into numerous different solutions which are out there.
Alex, thank you very much for taking time to appear on Radio Edge Talk tonight. And I know we had a couple of technical problems that caused us to be about 5 minutes late starting this evening, so no doubt you know, we could talk about this for much longer. Sadly, we have to move on. Thank you so much for joining us, and please feel free to stay to as we introduce Tony Gardner-Medwin in a moment, and our two guests later on this evening. But I'll understand if you need to ring off at any point, and there's you know, so just put the phone down on us any time that you need to go. But thank you again, and absolutely fascinating, and hopefully it's generated some comments online either tonight, or if anything comes in from folk listening to the archive, then I'm sure you'll be willing to pick up on any comments or questions.
Yes, very much.
Thanks, Alex. And Tony, I'd just like you to bring you back into the conversation. Tony, you're based at University College London, and you're going to, I would imagine, for most, the vast majority of people listening to the show live or the archive, probably introducing the whole concept of certainty-based marking. It's something that I heard of once at an e-learning event some time ago, and I'm really looking forward to hear you explain not only the LAPT project that you're involved in, but this whole concept of a particular type of marking in general. So if you wouldn't mind taking it away.
Yes, indeed, that's fine. It's certainly based marking. It's basically a simple concept that it's intended to motivate students to think more carefully about questions that you're asking them and the answers that they're giving. And the idea is you can use this with any kind of question as long as the student's answer is going to be marked right or wrong. And that's the majority of the questions that we use under the name sort of objective questions in online marking, and very often it's a great many of the questions that students get asked in exams. So when you use certainty-based marking, you of course ask the student for their answer, and you also ask how sure they are that they're right, that the answer that they're giving is right on a scale of 1, 2, and 3. And the simple marking scheme means that if they actually get it right, they'll get 1, 2, or 3 marks. But the downside of saying that you're confident, going for the high level of certainty that you're getting it right, is that if you get it wrong, instead of getting 3 marks, you get -6. You get a double negative penalty. Whereas if you acknowledge that you're uncertain about the answer and you get it wrong, then there's no penalty. So it's the basic essence of it is that there's a marking scheme where you choose, as a student, you choose how certain you are that you're going to get it right, 1, 2, or 3, and you get 1, 2, or 3 marks if it's right, and 0, -2, or -6 marks if it's wrong. So why do we use it? The concept of asking students how confident they are in their answers has been around a long time, since the 1930s. There's somebody called Kate Hefner, who's a musician, who used it in some of her assessments. Literature on that, a lot of research has shown that it increases the reliability of data that you get from testing results. But actually, my interest in using it is rather different. It's much more concerned with getting the students to think about the questions that they're dealing with, and getting them to acknowledge and to try to find reasons for either being able to justify or being able to identify that there's uncertainty in their knowledge about the issue. It's a bit like looking at educational learning. We learn really by thinking about the things that are at issue, and what the certainty-based marking is all about, in a way, is trying to make the process of learning a bit more like the way we learn tennis, to play tennis, or the way we learn to play a musical instrument. You do this by practice, you do it by challenging yourself, you do it by thinking about the issues that are around any current problem that you're dealing with, and you don't do it just by being told, oh yes, that's good, oh no, you did it wrong. You don't do it by being assessed in a sort of exam-like fashion. If you ask a student a question, often they don't actually think very hard before they give you an answer. You get often you get an answer that's just straight off the top of their head, the first thing that comes into mind. And if the student's got the answer right, then they don't think any more about it. They think, oh yeah, I knew it after all. And that's not really true, because often it's a hunch that they've got, they're really not sure about it, and sometimes it's almost a guess that they may have given you that's right. And it's simply not true that it's something they knew. If they get it wrong, they sort of shrug their shoulders and they say, it's too bad, I better look at this later, I better learn that thing. What we want them really to do in formative assessment, in a sort of self-test kind of mode, where they're doing this while they're studying to benefit their study, what we want them to do is to think about how the particular question relates to all sorts of other stuff that they may know. So if I ask you, for example, who was born first, was it Mozart or Washington? Or I ask you, does Russia have a coast on the Baltic? These may be things that you have an immediate sort of inclination to go one way or the other, but what we want you to do is not just to say that inclination that you have, but we want you to think about, when was Mozart? What were those pictures of Mozart and Washington looked like? Were they sort of in the same era? How long ago was the American Revolution? If Russia has a coast on the Baltic, then surely there must be a port there. What could be the name of that? We want the students to think about issues around the specific question, not just the question itself. The idea of using it really in self-tests is to get more out of the self-tests. I'm not a great fan of using computers for educating people, of trying to replace teachers. Teachers are very important, but it's really important, since computers are available and are being used a lot, and because teachers are so pressed, it's very important that we use them in a way that gets the most possible benefit from their use with the students in helping their study. So I don't know, is that enough to introduce the topic?
Yeah, certainly, Tony. Thank you very much. You kind of traced it back to the origin in the 1930s, well before e-learning and e-assessment. Can you say a bit more about the history? Which countries have really kind of embraced this approach, or districts within countries?
Well, there's been quite a bit of research in the United States, and indeed there's so much research has gone on, and so many promising results have been turned up by this, that I sort of set about doing this some 15 years ago, I think it was, and I did it off my own bat. I didn't realize there was a literature about this, but I've asked myself many times why it is that there is so much evidence in favor of using this kind of approach, not the specific system that I use. I tried to make it very simple, and I tried to adopt a very important principle, which is that the student must always be clearly motivated to acknowledge uncertainty when they aren't uncertain. Not all of the techniques that people have used have been like that, and so that's perhaps one of the reasons for people having dropped it, that once the students get savvy to what's going on in some of the marking schemes that have been used, it's not even sensible for them to be honest about their uncertainty, whereas the marking scheme that we use is something the mathematicians call a proper marking scheme, and it's clearly in your best interests, if you are uncertain, not to try to pretend that you're certain, because if there's a high probability you get it wrong, that means there would be a high probability you get a -6, and therefore you're clearly better off to go for either 0 or 1 than to go for a reasonable chance of a big negative penalty. So it's mostly in the United States. There's been some people interested in this in the Netherlands and in Sweden. I may have missed out important people elsewhere, but I'm not sure about that. Okay.
Joanna Alex, would you like to come in at this point?
David, it's probably Alec that should be talking to this more than me, because he probably knows an awful lot more about assessment. But the idea of making the I was going to say pupils, but the students more reflective So you're really talking about this maybe as a more of a as a formative tool as well as a summative tool. Would that it seems to fit very much in with some of the ideas current in assessment in education now in primary and secondary education in Scotland. Not maybe an exact fit, but running along the same sort of lines as ideas of formative assessment and getting people to think about what they're doing.
That's absolutely right, yes indeed. In fact, we've used it in summative assessment in UCL for a number of years, and the students really liked that. We actually got them to sort of vote on whether they wanted to continue it rather than using conventional marking systems, and they were quite strongly in favor of that. And indeed, when you use CBM in a summative assessment kind of mode, it actually shows that the data that comes out of that, you always have the conventional data there, I should stress there, so that when you use CBM, you're not losing anything in the information you get about the student. You know if they got the answer right or wrong, but you also know whether they think they're on firm ground or whether they think they're uncertain. And this increases, using CBM increases the reliability of the data a great deal. It's like it's increasing the efficiency of the questions, and it's in the kind of way that you could improve the efficiency of an exam by using more questions. It increases their effectiveness by about 60%, something like that. And indeed, even one of the ways of doing this is to split the exam data into two halves, and you look at the marks on one half. You've got both the conventional and the CBM marks, and you look at the marks on the other half, and you ask how good a predictor is the first half of the second half. Even if you're trying to predict the conventional marks on the second half, you're better off to use the CBM marks of the first half. It's giving you more information, it's less affected by chance, which is essentially adding a random element into the marking that you get. So it seems to be clearly valuable for both formative assessment and summative assessment, but I suppose this is more about me than about the CBM. I'm more sort of interested in formative assessment because I think that how the students learn is more important than how we grade them.
Certainly, I don't think you get many arguments in sort of Scottish education at the moment.
Oh, good.
For that one, yeah. Alec, did you have any? Does anything strike bells with you there?
Yeah, absolutely. I really love the idea of the fact that the reflective nature of the students being able to choose the one, two, or three is absolutely fantastic. And very often, when you do ask questions and people say, yes, I knew that answer all the time, it's a really nice way of digging beneath that, scratching beneath the surface, and actually seeing just how confident they actually were. And I think the idea of having such a weighted negative for such a great positive of the three is a really very, very simple, but very easy to work as well, and a very powerful solution. Very nice.
Yeah, I could see myself. Yes. Sorry, I could see myself using that in a primary classroom on a, you know, as you answer a question, hold the number of fingers up to show how confident you are, or something like that. You know, quite good fun. Sorry,
Tony, I've just got a final question. Can you touch on whether explain if there are any contemporary criticisms or debates around CBM, and also can you say a bit more about the LAPT project?
Sorry, I didn't hear the first part of what you were asking there.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just wondering if there are any kind of contemporary criticisms or debates around
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that people say is that you shouldn't use negative marking sometimes, and this in a sense is one of the merits of CBM, because it obviously does use negative marking. There's a big penalty, -6 if you say you're confident and you actually have got it wrong. But one of the things that students like about it is that they can avoid the negative marking by acknowledging that they're uncertain. So that's a very straightforward retort to this. It's interesting when you talk to both students and teachers about this, that the students are much more receptive to the sort of features of it than the teachers, who often seem to think in a rather superficial kind of way. They think that it must reward confident personalities or something like that, which is not true at all. It rewards people who can distinguish between questions that they are that they know a lot about and they are on firm ground about, and those questions where they're not. And even the most self-confident kind of person has both of those kinds of reactions to different questions. And it helps these people, both people who are unconfident, people who are rather diffident personalities, and people who are rather overconfident personalities, it can help them because they soon learn that if they're going to say they're sure about things all the time, they're going to do very badly. And likewise, if they never really believe in what they're answering and put C equals 1 all the time for their certainty, they'll soon realize that they actually know it better than they are giving themselves credit for. So it's very important that they get a lot of feedback about how they're doing in that kind of way. So that's one of the kinds of criticisms there are, which I think are really because people haven't thought about it, they haven't tried it out themselves well enough. Those are the main issues. Of course, when it comes to exams, it's quite a complicated issue to deal with all of the constraints on examiners. They're meant to have to use objective standards in setting their threshold criteria and things like that. And of course, they're a bit reluctant to go for something new that they aren't familiar with. But in fact, it's not very hard to deal with those issues if you actually try. So it's really conservatism, I think, is the main sort of criticism that makes it difficult for it to make some headway.
Thanks very much, Tony. And again, Tony, is it okay if listeners in the coming days and weeks of want to find out more information or have any questions about this topic, that we can maybe forward the details or forward the questions on to you?
Yes. I didn't talk about the LAP project, as you put it, as it were. The LAP is the name, basically, of the website, London Agreed Protocol for Teaching, it was. And it's used perhaps mainly at the moment by UCL and by Imperial College and King's College in London. And if people want to know more about this, that's the place to look. If you just Google LAPT or if you Google CBM and UCL, you'll get straight to it. I shan't actually sort of, the LAP site is www.uclacuk/LAPT, but you'll find it very easily through Google.
Okay. Again, thank you so much, Tony, for taking time out this evening. It's getting quite late, and I really appreciate you giving up your time and giving us such
You're very welcome.
Background on criteria-based marking. John and I, usually we have a long show like this, John and I usually kind of factor in a short break, but because we were testing out some new technology at the start of the show, we're a little bit behind schedule, and in a moment we're about to dial out to two colleagues, one in England and one in Canada, I believe, and so we're going to be hearing shortly from Chrissy Narancy and Dr. Chris Smith, they're going to be talking about social media e-portfolios for learning and assessment. So I'm going to ask everybody, and obviously Tony and Alex, if they wish to continue, to come in with comments and questions when we listen to our next two panels, that would be great. But I'm just going to ask everybody to mute their microphone if possible, or just stay quietly in the background while John just attempts through the Skype conference call to pull Chrissy and Chris into the tonight's show. So that should just take 30 seconds or so.
Hello,
Christine.
Hello, Tiz, yes.
Good evening. You're live on Radio EduTalk at the moment. This is John Johnson. And in the room, hopefully you can see David Noble and Tony Gardner-Medwin and Alec Duff. And I'm noticing that Chrissy Narancy seems not to be on Skype at the moment, so maybe we can just take it from...
She is on. We've been waiting.
Oh, sorry. Right.
It's okay. Don't worry.
I'll try and pull her in and see it then. Oh, Yes, she is.
Hello. Great.
Oh, no, that's it. Her. She's ringing me, so. Hello, Chrissy.
Hello, John. Hi.
Hello. Sorry about the delays. We had the usual technical mishaps, and we've got an awful lot of people in the room to broadcast tonight. You're in at the moment with myself, Christine, who you know, David Noble, who will be sort of leading the discussion in a wee minute, Tony Gardner-Medwin, and Alec Duff. I don't know if you heard the show earlier, but we're about to sort of go on with the second part now, which is hopefully yourself and Dr. Chris Smith talking about social media e-portfolios for learning and assessment. I'll just turn over to David now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. I do understand that we are very pressed for time. Some of us are in different time zones, and I understand that. And I suppose we should just crack on. So, if you wouldn't mind, just kind of introducing the topic. And as I understand it, you were involved in a very successful online workshop or seminar earlier on today as part of the e-Assessment Scotland online conference. I understand it was very, very well attended virtually, and we look forward to maybe a slightly different audience this evening in the coming days listening to this particular aspect of e-learning and e-assessment.
Yeah, sorry, I'll dive in quickly. it's Chris Smith here in Canada. We had a session around social media e-portfolios for learning and assessment, very much based around work which Chrissy is leading at University of Salford. That was my former institution, hence why I'm connected with this as well. But this whole area is something that excites me and interests me, and is something that I'm trying to develop over here in Canada as well, as part of my work in my new role here. Chrissy, do you want to say something as well?
Yes, thank you. Hello, everybody. Thank you for the invitation also to be with you and your listeners. I think, yes, the webinar was really well received, and we got some really juicy questions, I think, which made us think and reflect on why we are doing certain things the way we are doing, and gave us some ideas of how we could enhance it further. But what we would like also is to continue the conversation with practitioners and other institutions and learn from them as well, because I'm sure other people are doing equally and more exciting stuff than us. Back to you.
Thanks so much for the introduction, and it would be fantastic if you could maybe in the next few minutes just give us a flavour of what you were actually talking about earlier on today. I would imagine that some of our listeners will be experts in using certain types of social media, but possibly not in relation to e-portfolios and supporting learning and assessment. So if you could maybe give us a kind of key points of your presentation from earlier on today.
Chris, would you like to start?
I don't mind at all. Maybe, Chrissy, if you start by just saying something about the programme, yes. And then I'll go through the kind of things around the patchwork portfolio.
Yes, no, that's fine. Chris and I worked together before she left for Canada on the PCCAP program, which is a postgraduate certificate in academic practice, which leads to a recognized teaching qualification for academics and other professionals who teach in higher education. And when we started that program together with Chris in 2010, we wanted to introduce an e-portfolio across the program, and were then experimenting initially with a portfolio system, which didn't work really well. So we had to think fast and be resourceful with the limited resources that were available, and came up with the idea to introduce WordPress. Now, just fast forwarding, it's used across the program. across the modules. The portfolios are student-owned, and we use the WordPress.com version, so there's no institutional installation, and the portfolios are created, built by our students who are stuck on the program, and continue to be using after the program as well. Chris, do you want to add something?
Yeah, please. We talk about it, and we talked this morning about it being a kind of patchworky portfolio. And I think the idea of a patchwork is something that obviously is built out of different things that align but that are very much different components and that can be put together in different ways. And I think that's one of the kind of flavours of this, is that not everything will end up the same, and that's kind of important to us. So what we're using the portfolios for has been to create a personal and a collaborative learning space where the participants on the program can have ongoing conversations and exchanges, not only with people within the cohort, but also across other modules and across the wider community. They use it to capture the learning process that they're going through, so they can use parts of it as private as well as more public spaces, and that helps them capture the journey as it unfolds. It does help to encourage people to develop a kind of reflective habit, and it's very much about the learner being in the driving seat. They can choose how they use the portfolio, what kind of materials they use, whether they're using video or podcasts or text, and it really is an exciting space. So it's something that, through social media, that really models innovative practices and encourages our participants to be creative, and then hopefully those ideas then go back to the classroom, to their online teaching, to all areas of their work, as a consequence of the experience.
Yes, I would agree with Chris there. These spaces are collaborative, but they also are individual thinking spaces as well, I think, which are vital, because we have these conversations which most of them are done asynchronously, which gives us the time and space to reflect and develop our thoughts as well. Also, I think it's important to have to say something about the feedback that's coming from the tutors, but also through the teachers. And we have also evidence that people evaluate their own learning as well. So there's a lot of self-evaluation happening as well, and that's evident through the reflection. So the during the webinar, we made available some sample e-portfolios, and I hope when the recording is available that it will be included in the chat. I'm not sure exactly how, in what format the webinar will be made available, but not be we are able to provide fresh links.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, if there's any resources or links at all, then if you just forward them in an email to myself, we'll be able to get that up in the EduTalk website. If there's anything else that you want to share or to signpost, put up signposts for people. Thank you so much for covering this particular aspect of the course that you're running with us in such a short time. We're still joined, I understand, by Tony, John and Alex, and if anybody wants to come in with a question, if you just kind of reintroduce who you are and then put your question, that would be great. I've just got one to start off. But I suppose this doesn't relate to the actual current practice that you're involved in, but you did allude to problems in the past with introducing kind of blended learning and e-learning tools. Can you say a bit more about why things didn't take root initially?
I don't know whether Chris is going to come in on this. I think the issue that she was alluding to was primarily around the particular ePortfolio system, which was a proprietary piece of software, and the difficulties that we were experiencing with that. I think that's what Chrissy was commenting about. And by going with WordPress, open source, and very much as a social media thing that supports use as a blog and so on, we were able to do far more creative things than something that had been designed as very in an almost bounded way as an e-portfolio. Chrissy, can you?
Yes, happy to add to that, Chris. And I would say, I think maybe too often we are all too narrow-minded and think, okay, a toothbrush is for brushing teeth only. But I think a toothbrush can be a valuable tool to, for example, in painting or cleaning bathrooms or have beard, all kinds of things. So we went for an option, for a tool, for a platform that perhaps wasn't designed to become an e-portfolio, but through experimenting with it, I think we made it a useful and creative space, as we already mentioned.
This is really, really fascinating, especially as we heard earlier from Alec talking about using WordPress in primary schools in Scotland. I maybe missed earlier, but I'm just wondering, do you use as a tool in either for teachers or for learners to keep up with each other, the sort of RSS and aggregation that's built into to blogs and WordPress?
Are you asking us?
Yeah, sorry. John,
yes, I mean, I personally have a WordPress blog where I reflect on my own practice and I share that with my students. So we try to model practices because we need to practice what we preach. It's really important, I think. So we try to model that through my individual blog, but also we have a program blog for the program, which we are using all tutors on the program and aggregate, and we'll start aggregating future portfolios all in one place.
Right, yeah, that's so. Are you using, I don't know, a plugin or free WordPress or something to bring all these things together?
Yes, at the moment we use Google Reader.
Yeah, okay.
But I think we might be looking for something that does the job better, because I am experiencing some difficulties with that tool at the moment.
Right, I don't know if you're aware of the work in the University of Mary Washington in the States. They're doing quite a lot along these lines, and I think they're actually working with the as a plugin developer for WordPress, developing Feed WordPress, which allows all sorts of interesting aggregation, so they can bring in particular students, a group of cohort of students, into one place together in quite an interesting way. I mean, I think this is what we're saying about the toothbrush is really relevant to us now.
Because I have been, that's really fascinating what's happening in Washington. I would love to find out more. So if you can tweet or send us some further information. I don't know if it would work with WordPress.com, or if you would need a WordPress.
Right. No, they've got I think they host their own.
Yes. I think there are more options there if you have your own installation. At the moment, we only use the online version. I guess you could consider perhaps using an institutional one.
This is really interesting to me as well, because obviously I'm here at a university in Canada, and one of the things that one areas that I'm trying to work on is to encourage the use, because we have a lot of interest in e-portfolios, but not a lot of experience at the moment. So the contact at Mary Washington that you mentioned is very useful to me. I don't know quite how far away it is from where I am, but I'll certainly try and make contact there as well, because this is definitely something that people are wanting to explore here, and I hope we can do similar creative work to the work that's been going on at Salford.
Very interesting to hear so many overlaps between the work that you guys are doing and the work that I'm doing. My name is Alex Duff, and it's very nice to meet Chris and Christine. I'm heavily involved with trying to provide appropriate portfolio solutions for Scottish school children. And so some of the issues that you've raised there are very similar to some that we have. One of the interesting ones is that John was talking there about an RSS feed. Of course, that is an issue that John is aware that we have brought within the current solution that we use in schools. We also use WordPress, and it's behind authentication software, which makes it difficult to have an RSS feed live. However, we have got a workaround which we're using at the moment, and in fact, Glasgow City are in the process just now of piloting that and seeing how they could run with it. But it was very interesting to hear that you experienced some difficulties with the commercial software that you looked at and ended up using WordPress. That was the exact same journey that we had on as well. It's also very interesting to hear that the runners very much in the driver's seat. Of course, that is something that in Scotland we're very, very keen to encourage as well, to make sure the pupils are responsible for what it is that they do and make sure that they have got full capability of making sure that what they have got there is kept up to date and so on.
Sorry, I was trying to come in just to say I like your comment about the learners in the driving seat. That's very much what we were also talking about with this use of e-portfolios at Salford, in that we see assessment in higher education as very much putting the learners in the driving seat, and what we do with assessment and what we do with the use of these e-portfolios is very much about being learner driven and about the learners reporting on their learning through assessment, but in creative and innovative ways. So I think there's some really interesting opportunities, as well as some, it was good to hear that these journeys are happening both at school level as well as higher education level. Really, really positive. Thank you.
I love the concept as well, I love your patchwork e-portfolio. I think what we've done in Scotland, though, is we've tried to keep the structure of the e-portfolios as similar as possible. One of the main reasons for that is trying to make it as manageable a system as possible, to try and make it easy for the teachers to be able to navigate around the system. It's also interesting to hear about you having public spaces as well as the private spaces. The solution we have at the moment doesn't really have any public spaces. We at the moment are just allowing the pupils and the teachers to have access to these, although of course we are trying to encourage local authorities as well now to look at the possibility of widening that, perhaps to include parents and carers, or perhaps groups of peers, or perhaps even if it's primary school age pupils, to allow some of the secondary staff to start to have access as well for transitional projects.
Alex, this is really interesting. If I'm coming in as Christy here speaking, do you think perhaps that there are differences between what you are doing and what we are doing? Because our students are actually adults, while yours are children, and I think there are sensitive issues with child protection, and perhaps, I don't know, having public spaces. How would you deal with that?
Some of the child safety issues are paramount to everything that we do, not just the e-portfolios, but in fact everything that we do through our national internet. So, yeah, and I think, I don't know the number of adults that you're dealing with, but currently we have about 55,000 pupils who are using our system, and that is one of the other reasons why it's very important to us that the pupils have this common structure, so staff can actually dig into it and extract the information they need to be able to see.
Alex, it's really interesting. I understand that you have like group blogs, group WordPress presence of web pages. Is this correct?
I'm sorry, could you say that again, Kristen? What kind of pages?
You operate WordPress as a group, so you have group spaces.
Yes.
Yes.
The portfolios though are individual.
Are they individual?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the system allows, and Alec will be more familiar, but it allows lots of our schools use them as class blogs as well. They use the same system, just using different themes. And I think there's an awful lot to be gained by opening up at least some of the children's work to the public, because I think an audience is a really powerful driver for children using blogs.
So I just want to finish off by saying that the permissions which we have got, of course, make it incredibly flexible. You know, it's possible for us to allow as many or as few people to have access to these as they see fit. So it's very, very simple to change the permissions and change it. For example, as John is saying, to having it as a public blog to having it as a private blog. Of course, the pupils don't have the ability to do that. It's only the teaching staff.
Chris and Chrissy, can I just ask, in terms of the particular programme, the postgraduate certificate in academic practice, you know, anecdotal evidence, or do you have data as to the kind of balance between the amount of public activity versus the amount of private activity that the students are involved in?
Right, well, I can answer that question partly because I'm not a number person, but I did some, I put some numbers together during the last semester, and we had about 450 comments on 20 e-portfolios. So we can calculate how much on average that is per portfolio. But the external engagement was quite limited. I would say around maybe 20% of that. And mainly because initially the portfolios were private, most of them were private. As the course progressed, students opened up their portfolios and made them public. And that is when the conversation started happening outside the cohort, outside the university. And many linked their WordPress portfolio to Twitter or Facebook to encourage other people to start the conversation with them. Does this answer your question?
Yeah, well, certainly. And just briefly as a follow-up, I mean, for people who are maybe not familiar with the programme, and I've only done some background reading, but the members of the cohort you know, go on to get this teaching qualification in higher education. Again, it may be too early to have data on it. I appreciate that, Chris and Chrissy, but any evidence, any kind of pointers that such candidates who have been involved in either public aspects or private aspects of using their e-portfolio, that they're going on into their teaching practice and actually transferring some of these skills and practices into their everyday teaching with, for example, undergraduate students?
Exactly.
Chris,
do you want to answer?
I was just going to say, first of all, but Chrissy, please follow on. Certainly the session we ran this morning, it was three of us, and the other person was Craig Despard, who is has been one of the participants on the programme, and very much he has taken the ideas of the e-portfolio and a number of the kinds of different tools that he's used during his experiences on the programme, and is very much using them in the classroom. It's been a real immersive experience, and from it he is now trying out ideas with his undergraduate students that he would never have dreamed of using before. I think that would be a fair comment to make. I don't think he would be mind you saying so. Chrissy?
Yes, we have a number of of students on the program who started thinking and implementing, not just thinking because the actions would count, implementing portfolio approaches with their own students. Other people have started using it for their PhD. For example, we have some PhD students, graduate teaching assistants, and we have experienced and new lecturers, and there are a number of them who are integrating it into their practice. And that's where the real impact lies, because, I mean, we hear so often that our programs are tiny and our cohorts are 20, 25 people, and where's the impact? Well, the real impact's not in the number of people who participate, but in the impact they have on student learning, on the student experience. And that can be massive, because two semesters ago, and Chris might remember that, I did some calculations and I worked out that we had 30 students then on the program who worked with over 3,000 students in one semester. So the impact really should be measured there at student level, and how these lecturers and other professional support learning change their practice.
Yeah, thanks very much. We just have, sorry to interrupt, we have about 5 minutes left before I'll just wrap up tonight's show. So would anybody else like to come in with any questions for Chrissy and Chris?
I think I could actually get into quite a long conversation with Alec, Chrissy and Chris over the whole WordPress possibilities, but there's probably not time for that. What I would sort of ask everybody who's here, if we'll put out the audio's being archived and it will be lightly edited later on and then posted as a podcast. And if you've got any URLs at all, if you could send them to me, that would be great, and I'll include them in the show notes. I think it's just been really fascinating listening to everybody almost arriving in the same sort of places from all sorts of different directions tonight.
Yes, I mean, we found the conversation, I'm sure Chris would agree, fascinating as well this afternoon in the webinar, but also here with all three of you this evening. But I would like to add, please, perhaps it's something that stuck in my mind when you had the previous conversation with somebody and a colleague from another institution said, I don't remember who it was, students not thinking too hard. But we want our students to think hard, and we help them think hard, help them think, rethink, and unthink. And we think the social media e-portfolios and the support we provide, the feedback conversations we have with them, so the community we cultivate and grow with our students make that happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I think what we'd all say, and I think through the materials that perhaps will be added to the website with the podcast, is that if anybody is interested to continue the conversations with us, we'd all be delighted to do that. And I hope amongst us we can do as well.
Thanks very much, Chris. I mean, I've got so many more questions around, again, just reading more of the background to the programme. You know, you talk about knowledge building and peer support and blended learning, and these are all big concepts, and it would have been really interesting to hear more about, you know, how that actually plays out in practice within your programme. But I'll start to wrap up. We'll leave it there. It's getting okay. Very late. So thanks very much to Chrissy and Chris for joining us this evening.
Thank you for inviting us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And can I just put a wee apology out to Chrissy? I'm just looking at my Skype chat window, which was buried under text windows and Nicecast and all sorts of other things. And I missed that whole conversation. I'm really sorry about that, Chrissy.
That's okay. We were waiting impatiently. I should admit.
I'm really sorry.
Okay, well, just to wrap up then tonight, we heard from Tony Gardner-Medwin on certainty-based marking, and Alex Duff was talking about student portfolios and profiles. In the second half of the show, Chrissy Narancy and Dr. Chris Smith were talking about social media e-portfolios for learning and assessment. This has been Radio EduTalk, which goes out every Wednesday. We try our best to do that, and we have got a special broadcast on Friday, that's this Friday coming, 31st of August, when we will be going as delegates, John and I, to the E-Assessment Scotland Day Conference in Dundee, and we'll be just going as normal delegates, but we'll have our bags of technology with us, and we'll, between workshops and between keynotes, we'll be hoping to work with a colleague in Dundee just to try and capture some of the flavour of the day and speak to some of the speakers and try and get the main points of their presentations and relay them to those people who can't make it to the event. So just watch out for that on Twitter and at Radio EduTalk and edutalk.cc. Next Wednesday, we're going to have another E-Assessment Scotland online conference special. We will be joined then from 9 p.m. British Summer Time. Yep, it's still British summertime, supposedly, by Kenji Lam of Soft, David Walker of the University of Dundee and co-founder of E-Assessment Scotland, and Cliff Beavers who is chair of the e-assessment association, and just to also throw into the mix is a kind of regular Wednesday evening program. So an hour before that, that's Wednesday the 5th of September at 8 p.m. BST, I'm delighted to welcome to the show Graham Thompson, who's director of the Scottish Centre for Studies in School Administration, SCISA, and Graham will be talking about lesson observation and learning conversations. So on behalf of John and myself, thanks again to our four guests. I think the technology's held off fairly well, or held up quite well tonight. And until next time, take care.
Good night, folks.